is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence. We hold the power of perception. This power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, the seen and the unseen. Hi, I'm your host, Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach utilizing energy psychology, mindset alignment, and functional medicine to support my clients in their journey to have holistic health, happiness, and harmony. Now, part of my coaching incorporates personality structure because our personality is not fixed and it is not permanent. So it's actually an enormous opportunity for personal growth and personal development. And specifically, I use the Enneagram personality structure in my coaching. That's what we're going to talk about here today because it is amazing. And I like to start off with a funny story, but I'm going to keep it for the end. I assure you, I will not deprive you of humor. And I do have to say, one of the greatest gifts of the Enneagram is the fact that it turns human behavior and annoyances into humor. It so quickly transmutes what is agitating and aggravating into something that is humorous because it's so predictable. So there are so many personality structures or types, systems out there. Why the Enneagram? Well, the Enneagram actually picked me. I didn't pick it. I was introduced to it briefly by a friend who also briefly introduced me to human design many, many, many years ago. And when I heard or saw people on social media, you know, et cetera, talking about the Enneagram, the people that I saw, my perception at the time was that they used it to explain why they were the way they were, or more honestly, what my feelings were about my perception of it was that they used it as an excuse to be the way they were and to not necessarily try to grow within themselves. Now, that, of course, is my filter of my personality type. I just didn't know it yet. So because of that, I really wasn't too much of a fan of the Enneagram. I thought it was just a big old excuse maker. Little did I know that I would come to love it. I would become fiercely loyal to it. It would be one of the things that impacted my relationship solely from a cognitive standpoint of just knowing the system, impacted my relationships more than anything else. So if you get nothing else from this episode other than coming to understand other people's perspectives or desire to learn the Enneagram, it is a gift that is going to keep on giving with all of the connections, all of the relationships you have. It's enormous. And it's wonderful and it's incredible. And I absolutely love the Enneagram, not only though, because it's so accurate that when I ask people things that they are challenged with or things that they love, when I'm getting to know them, when I recognize personality type and at expos and things, when I'm introducing people to energy work, they'll ask me if I'm psychic because it's so accurate. It's so accurate. But not only do I love it because cognitively it's a miracle maker. I love it because it's also growth focused. It gives you a pathway and a map of how you can stay in a state of empowerment and strength and have an avenue to refine those weaknesses that we all have. We all have weaknesses, so that we don't irritate ourselves and we don't irritate others around us. So as you listen to this episode, there is one thing that you really have to grasp and understand before we get into the types, is that the Enneagram system, to be able to identify what type you are, it is not behavior focused. It's not behavior based. We all do things. A lot of us do the same things, and that does not determine what type we are. So as much as I love the videos out there that stereotype the different Enneagram types and will tell you what your song is or what Halloween costume each type would be, that's not actually what the Enneagram is based on. It's upon why. Why are you doing what you do? It's based upon the motivation and fear that drives you to do the behavior. So a lot of people will take the online assessments, which I don't love, and become more confused about what their Enneatype is than they were confused before they even knew what their Enneagram type was. Okay, not really, but that's a joke, but also there's some honesty in that, because the online assessments will measure your behavior. It's not about behavior, it's about the why. And then it will give you usually three types that you score the highest in. That doesn't necessarily mean that the type that motivates and fears those things align with you is your type, because you may have scored higher in a behavior that's more associated with another type. For me, that would be the six. I'm a one, but I would score as a six, especially before I did much personal development work. So I truly believe there's a better way of identifying your type, and the platform to make that happen is Stronger Together. Come and check that out. It'll walk you through how to type yourself, and then you also can get in on refining your personality type. And if you're interested in that Stronger Together community, of course you can find that on our profile under News for the Soul, or also by visiting my website, www.fiercelyradiantsoul.com. But today, as you listen and follow along, key in on the motivators and the fears. I will be sharing those for each of the types, because that is where the true identification of what your type is. Oh boy, I'm so excited to jump into this. And I really want to bring a different approach to it, to the Enneagram here today, to this conversation. I'll share a little bit about each type, as is the standard information that you're going to find out there that I've done in other podcasts, but I really want to approach this from a little bit different angle and give some different information about what it's like to be each type and how they perceive and sense the world around them. So the reality of our being is that we are our greatest asset. The other reality, the harsh truth, is that not only are you your greatest asset, you are your greatest liability as well. The cool thing about the Enneagram is that it helps alleviate that aspect of liability, the self-annoyances and the self-irritations and the way that we really grind the gears of other people and irritate the crap out of them too, because that's part of being human. So let's not pretend like it's not. The ability to see the world the way someone else sees it is a powerful connecting gift. And so the Enneagram will just start with saying that there are nine different filters. There's nine different ways that people view the world. And through each filter, it has its unique motivators and fears like we've talked about. It has its unique characteristics, unique strengths, its unique priorities, its unique orientation to time. It has its own energy or emotion that fuels it. And it has its default center for processing information. That's a lot about yourself to have mapped out. So this episode is going to be such a fun and exciting episode to explore who you are, to learn about yourself, to understand why you tick, why you do the things you do, what drives you, maybe a little bit about what irritates you. We'll talk a little bit about growth edges. It's going to be so good, like a masterclass. You might want to grab a pen and a paper. And I cannot wait to hear what you think is the most valuable takeaway from this episode, because I assure you, you have so much opportunity to learn. So the Enneagram maps out that there are three intelligence centers, the head, the heart, and the gut. So we're going to start here today talking about our gut points. We're going to start with the Enneagram 8s, because the Enneagram 8s, while I made a really good case for the Enneagram 1s discounting the Enneagram as a whole, the 8s are actually the hardest to bring on board and to have a buy-in to the value of this. So we're going to start with them. They are aptly named the Challenger. There are actually a couple different major Enneagram researchers out there. And so I've seen two different names for each of the Enneagram types. I might not be using the name that you're familiar with. If you're already familiar with the system, that is why, if that's the case, but we are all good. And we're just going to roll through it with these labels I use. And if you want to call them something else, that's totally cool. That is all welcome here. So our Enneagram 8s are challengers. Oh, our 8s. They have the most passion, the most energy, the most force, the most masculine energy in the personality type. Masculinity is not male or female. So we're just talking about the protectiveness and the force of the energy. Like, when you're around an 8, you will feel it. You'll feel that real stern and forceful energy. They absolutely are natural born leaders. They will get things done. They will think about challenges of the future and have a solution for them, but in a really healthy and balanced way. We're going to talk about later about how that shows up for the 6s in a whole different way. So remember, it's not the behavior, it is the why. So our 8s are also the protectors. They will protect the underdog, cheer for the underdog. Very beautiful aspect of their personality. With the 8s, what you do matters far more than what you say. So if you have an 8 in your life, if you say you're going to do something, please, if you value this relationship, do it. Do what you say, say what you do. They actually expect to be betrayed. And that's why what you do is so important, because they expect betrayal. So it's our job to help the 8s come to understand they live in a world where not everyone will betray them, and that it's safe to have connection. I like to use the analogy that 8s are like M&Ms. They have this hard outer shell. It's that protective layer. But once you can get through that, you're going to find this soft, ooey gooey, warm, wonderful, luscious center of them. But they will make you earn it, so to speak. The one thing about the Enneagram 8s, and I would love to not have a conversation about gender, but it's part of our world. It is what it is. The same characteristics of the 8 that is perceived to be strength in men, if you're an Enneagram 8 man, the world, our culture, our society, think that you have got it together and you've got it going on. If you are a female 8, same traits, same society, but you're going to be perceived as being dominant, bossy, bitchy. So that's unfortunate. Keep that in mind as you live with the eights in your life to bring equality to the playing field. They're just characteristics. Gender need not apply. The anger, so our gut points, the energy, the emotion that fuels their personality is anger. And for an eight, they are just straight up pissed and then it's over. So they're just going to have direct anger. You're going to know they're pissed and then it's done. Our Enneagram 8s are time-oriented to the future. Like I mentioned, they can see the things that need solved and do it. So they are thinking and doing oriented. Not as much feeling, even though they are a gut point. The thing about the gut points is they will have that intuitive hit or instinctual hit, and then they'll pop into their head and logic their way out of why that gut information really doesn't have any value. The fear of the Enneagram 8 is being controlled. So you may experience a lot of control with Enneagram 8s because they feel as though if they have the control, other people can't control them. And their fear, of course, is of being hurt. What motivates them is protecting themselves and charting their own destiny, that large and in charge energy. Moving on to our Enneagram 9s, the peacemakers. Our peacemakers are time-oriented to the past. Now, the Enneagram 9 will see two sides of every story. They are the people who can sit on the fence and have that objective perspective of two sides to everything. So if you feel like the nines in your life, like, won't pick a side, it's not because they want to sit on the fence. It's not because they don't have opinions and thoughts, but they aren't disagreeing with, or they're not agreeing with you. They're just whatever that situation is, they're agreeing or disagreeing. They're not doing that to irritate you. They genuinely see both sides of the story. This actually used to irritate my significant other, he being an Enneagram 7, and me taking on some of the Enneagram 9. We would have different conversations and about, you know, different theories or things happening in the world. And he's like, just pick a side. And I'm like, I see both sides though. Why do I have to pick? That is the epitome of an Enneagram 9. They don't really love making decisions either. So they don't want to do anything that's going to cause conflict. They're very conflict avoidant until conflict affects integrity, and then they will make a choice and it will align with their integrity every single time. So decisions aren't their favorite until they have to make a decision that aligns with their integrity, and that is easy and peasy for them. They are the most repressed for both internal and external. And what I mean by that is that they will repress any conflict. So anything that they feel that annoys them or, you know, creates any dynamic with another human, if they are to talk about it, that would lead to conflict, they're going to repress it and not actually talk about it. Now, external as well, they're going to repress anything external of them that creates conflict because they want to live in this conflict-free existence. And so it causes a ton of repression. It also causes them to exude their anger, the anger that their personality type fuels on, that emotion is anger. They express it passive-aggressively. And they express it passive-aggressively until they have repressed so much of what they feel that pressure cooker, the pressure builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it eventually explodes. If the pressure can't be released, that's how pressure cookers work. The anger of the nine is the same way. And the timeline of a nine to get to the place where the pressure cooker explodes is different. That is not predictable. So if you see someone being awfully passive aggressive, you know that they are in a state of stress. And make it a safe, conflict-free environment for them to talk about that, because they will judge something as being conflicting or conflictual when it actually isn't. But because they're so avoidant of that, they're going to default to the safe space of no conflict. So that is a growth edge for a nine, and it's our job to support the nines in our life to create a conflict-free space for them to be able to talk about the things that they want without having a defensive response or some type of response that's going to lead to that conflict. So their fear is actually of loss or separation from others. And they are motivated by that conflict-free, peaceful life. Above all else, that's what they want. Moving on to our Enneagram 1s, the reformers, also are perfectionists. Enneagram 1s, to be an Enneagram 1, there is a constant inner critic in their mind. And that inner critic is telling them that no matter how much time, attention, and effort they have put to getting something absolutely perfect, it's not good enough, never good enough. They're never going to get that inner critic to say that they have nailed it, they've knocked it out of the park, or to affirm something, no matter what, it is never good enough. Their orientation to time is in the present. And the Enneagram 1s in our lives, they want to be shown or told that they are good. And they want this without having to ask for it. So if an Enneagram 1 has to ask for something, you can give it to them, but please just understand if they've asked, they will likely negate whatever you say as not having actually existed because they had to ask for it. I know this is really frustrating. But it is the way the internal workings of an Enneagram 1 works. The ones are judgmental, as you heard in my intro to the Enneagram. I was very judgmental about the Enneagram. And they look for faults in other people because it's the only way they can level the playing field with their own imperfections. And that doesn't necessarily feel good if they speak that, you know, out loud, or you feel that energy from them. But they're not actually trying to pick the other person apart. It's this internal process of saying, okay, I'm good enough because the other individual has these flaws. Our Enneagram 1s love efficiency. If it's not efficient, chop, chop, let's get to it. This is the best way to do it. They're not interested. And Enneagram 1s, you think your way is the best way, and you will push and force that on other people. So Enneagram 1s out there, your growth edge is to understand that other people's way of doing things is the best way for them, and your way of doing things is the best way for you, and there's more than one way to do a thing. The anger of the Enneagram 1 is actually expressed through resentment, and it's internalized. So they turn all of their anger in on themselves, which can be very harmful, honestly. Things like eating disorders are seen most prominently within the Enneagram 1s. And they will internalize the anger until it finally spews out. But when it does spew out, more times than not, it is going to be displaced on something that they're not actually angry about. And it'll probably be, you know, the very critical, nitpicky type of expression of anger. And that's just surface level. You got to get beneath that with an Enneagram 1 to really get into the heart of the matter with them. So the fear of the Enneagram One is being corrupt, evil, bad, and the motivator is having integrity, being a good person, being good. And the Enneagram Ones love to just, everything needs to be a little bit better every day. Just a little bit better every day, which actually serves them, because I have heard some of the great Enneagram teachers out there say that the hardest Enneatype to be is the Enneagram One. And because of that desire to be a little bit better every day, they're going to do their own inner work to make that happen. Behind the difficulty of which type is the most challenging to be, behind the One is the Four, and then the Seven for their own reasons. But the Ones and the Fours are really designed to embrace that inner work. And so it's really cool to see how each type is designed in a way that supports themselves. It's really cool. It's like, you know, that intelligence that created us really knew what it was doing. We just have to learn and understand how to be ourselves and how to master our own design. So moving on to the heart points. The heart points are the Enneagram 2s, 3s, and 4s. These are the feelers in the world. Where the gut points were the doers, the heart points are the feelers. The Enneagram 2 is the giver, and our heart-centered spaces, they all are fueled by the emotion of shame. So you will see that shame theme with them quite often. Little aside, again, behaviors aren't everything. So I want to also just mention Enneagram 7s. I have seen time and again Enneagram 7s, shame on you. They will shame people. So don't let just one thing lead to your conclusion that you know what type someone is. Make sure you're collecting a lot of the clues, a lot of the information and puzzle pieces and things that they're saying. So our Enneagram 2s are the givers, and they are the helpers in the world. The Enneagram 2s feel everything around them, and they feel everything that is not their own. So they take in all this information from the world, and then they want to do something about it, which is where this helping really comes into play, because once they have that information, they want to help others not feel some negative sort of way. And so they also are wired that they think they have to help others in order to feel their own worth. And so our Enneagram 2s fall into this growth edge of helping where their help isn't being sought and relinquishing their own self-care and putting that second to what other people need. And if you're looking around the world or all the people that you come into contact with, you will be busy helping other people all day long. There won't be time for yourself. And that's really what happens with the two. And then they feel underappreciated and they get a little bit more domineering and resentful. And it all stems from not taking care of themselves, which is also the thing that feels so incredibly selfish to them that they have such a challenging time doing it. And so that's where their growth edges is learning that taking care of themselves is going to lead to them being an even better giver. They're going to have more. Their cup is full. They have more to give others. And to move beyond that cringeworthy feeling that they have when they think about doing something for themselves. And the twos really deeply, deeply want to be wanted. So their growth edge is to take care of themselves and to know that they are wanted. Our job is to appreciate the two and to let them know that they are wanted. So the two's fear is of being alone, being unloved, and their motivator is to feel appreciated. So two words, thank you, can never be overused with any of the twos in your life. Never overused. say thank you all the time, and that dynamic and relationship will be so much easier to traverse. Moving on to the Enneagram 3s, who are our achievers in the world. The Enneagram 3 is oriented to the future time and doing the thing. So they will actually walk into a room and they can feel and read the room really, really well. And then they will repress all of that information so that they can do. So that they can do the things. The threes feel like they can mold the future into what they want it to be, which is pretty cool and awesome, because when we're coming from a place of energetics and manifestation and creation, there's a lot of truth in that. However, we don't want to be doing that from an energy of manipulation. And the threes have the challenge of wearing a mask and telling other people what they think that person wants to hear. And so sometimes being on the receiving end of a three, we can feel as though they're being dishonest or two-faced, when that is not even where the motivation for that comes from. They think that they are doing something positive. So it's really important to understand the why behind people's actions and to let the threes know that it's safe to be who they are. No mask required. The interesting thing about threes is that the people around them don't want them to change, because they are so successful in the doing that people like that and value that and benefit from that. And so they want them to stay in that pattern. So that can be challenging for the three in setting aside what people external of them want to do, what is most fulfilling and inspiring for them. Threes, again, being feeling repressed, they're going to set aside what they feel to deal with it later. But threes, later doesn't come. So this is your growth edge to get out of the doing and to get into the feeling. The fear of the three is of being a failure, and the motivation of a three is attention and admiration. So they do in order to feel worth, and then they want the kudos and attagirl, attaboy for those efforts of doing. They want that attention. They want the admiration. Moving on to our Enneagram fours, who are the individualists. Our Enneagram 4s believe that they arrived on the planet with a flaw. Think about that. Makes my heart so sad. And since as an Enneagram 1, we're not going to get into arrows and wings today. There's a lot more to understand about the Enneagram. We're just going to start with the introduction. But when I get stressed out, I take on a lot of the characteristics of the 4. So actually, I think the 4s and 1s both believe that they are flawed, and they're constantly on this pursuit to see how they can fix their flaw or fix themselves. And it is more profound in the four. But there is no flaw, and that is the biggest growth edge of the four, is understanding that they aren't flawed simply by being here. The passion energy for fours is envy. And the envy is not jealousy. The envy is that they want the comfort others have in the world, because they live in this sort of if only paradigm. And so they feel they are very, very, very intuitive. They feel they're heart-centered. They feel all of the things. They feel a lot of melancholy, and they go very deep into their feelings. And because of that, they don't have a lot of comfort, and they just want the comfort that other people have in the world. And they long for peace and relationship with others. But we are talking about deep, dependable relationships with other people. So fours will make the mistake of talking on the same level to people that they just met yesterday, also that they've known for 5 years. And so when you're getting to know someone, some people don't have that depth in that initial connection to go that deep as though they've known you for 5 years. And a lot of fours will say, well, it just weeds out. It weeds people out really quickly. It's a blessing. But some people just need a little warming up time. Now, as I mentioned before, fours have the most inner work to do, but they want to do it. They're wired to do it. And they so much want to be seen and heard and understood. They want to get out of the mundane ordinariness, and they want those deep, deep connections with people. And our fours, they support their healing with thinking. So they'll feel, and then they'll think about how they feel, and then they'll feel and think and feel and think. And so their growth edge is to do, because the way that we process our feelings is through the doing. But fours have a harder time where the twos, they feel and they want to do something about it. Fours feel and then they want to think about it. And thinking, thoughts always precede a feeling. So thinking creates more feelings, and they just get caught in that loop and dynamic. So they feel and think and feel and think and feel and think. Fours, get up and do. It will help you so much. So the fear of the four is feeling ordinary or having no impact in the world. And the motivator of the four is to be unique and expressive and creative. Our fours are very, very intuitive, and they really know and perceive what's going on around them quicker, faster, better than any of the other types innately. So we are going to move into the last triad, or the last intelligence center, which is our head points. These are the people who process information by default through their head, relying on rationality and logic and thinking. And the underlying emotion that runs their personality structure is fear, and some types refer to it, some research refers to it as fear, some refers to it as anxiety. So fear, anxiety. We're talking about the same thing there in context of just the Enneagram. So the Enneagram 5s are the investigators. They want to know how things work. They want to know every last very engineer-minded people. And our Enneagram 5s, to be an Enneagram 5, they have a measured amount of energy that they are given to get through every single day. So every day they wake up with the same amount of energy. There's nothing they can do to add to it. There's no carryover plan. They don't get to bank a little bit of extra energy they had from yesterday and bring it into today. Starts over every day, same amount of energy. And so what they are doing is managing their energy every day, all day long, because running out of energy is tormentingly vulnerable for them. And so they will go to great lengths to manage that energy so that does not happen. And this can create behaviors of being more secretive, withdrawn, introverted. They are the most introverted personality of the Enneagram type. They are the observers rather than the participants. So you go to a conference, and in the back of the room are the people who just want to take it in and observe and not do the thing and get into it. These are typically going to be your Enneagram 5s because they are doing repressed. They will think, but getting them to do might take too much of their energy. And what's really interesting about the fives is that the things that they plan to do, even if they don't execute the plan, it still to them counts as doing. So this might really resonate for some of you who know those withdrawn individuals in your life, and you might look at that and say, wow, that's so unfulfilling. Like, how are they content spending so much time at home, being alone so much? Well, this really explains it. If they had a plan to do something, counts the same as having done it. Even though they didn't have the experience, it's fine. It's the exact same. Also with the Enneagram 5, touching drains them. And people who are in relationships with the Enneagram 5 will say that sometimes it feels like you're in a relationship with a robot because there aren't any feelings. Our Enneagram 5s are Switzerland. They are neutral. So like the Enneagram 9s, we talked about can see both sides of the situation. Enneagram 5s are just neutral. Like they don't have a side. They're just Switzerland. So out of all of the types of the Enneagram, it costs the Enneagram 5s the most. It costs them absolutely the most to have an intimate connection with anyone. And by intimate, I don't mean significant other. I mean an intimate relationship of any sort, whether it's a friend or a significant other, even a family member. So these people, you may feel like they always are holding you at bay a little bit. And it is because that investment, that energy that it would take to be in an intimate relationship costs them a lot because they only have so much energy to get through the day that they're managing. Their orientation to time is the past. And the fear of the five is being incompetent, being useless. And the motivation of the five is understanding their environment and possessing knowledge, of course, which is why they went to research. I love the Enneagram fives to use them as my personal Google. And my mentor actually said this to me yesterday about I was calling myself out on having a little bit of mental laziness that I didn't want to research something on my own. And she reframed it for me like an Enneagram 7 would do, which we'll get to that in a minute. And she said, well, I think when you seek out someone else who has the knowledge, you are Googling. You're just human Googling. I love that. I love that analogy. I love that way of looking at it. And our Enneagram 5 are our human Googles. What they know, they're going to know a lot about what they know because they want to have the specifics and they want to have it down. So that's our friends, the Enneagram 5. The Enneagram 6, the loyalists, the 6s are special. We'll get into why they, what sets them apart of being very different from any other Enneagram type in just a moment. But our Enneagram 6s are the doing all the behind the scenes tasks type of people. They're elevating others. They will be the people that you've had as friends since grade school because they're very loyal. Because they're so loyal, they'll elevate other people. So they won't want job promotions. Because they don't want to surpass their peers. They want to elevate their peers. Now, the Enneagram 6s have a committee in their head. So like the Enneagram 1s have a inner critic. It's just one voice. The Enneagram 6s have a whole committee. And they also, in that sense of a committee, they will be the types that will take a poll of what would you do in this situation? What would you do in this situation? What would you do in this situation? They want to know what everyone else would do to be able to think about what it is that they should do instead of trusting their intuition, their gut center, and being able to discern their own path. So that's part of that committee focused perspective as well. Now, our sixes, they focus a lot on authority. And the way that they're different from any other type is that there are phobic Enneagram sixes and there are counterphobic Enneagram sixes. So remember that fear and anxiety is the underlying emotion that operates for all of the head points. And the Enneagram sixes have the most anxiety because They are thinking about every possible thing that could happen in the future, sort of like the eights, but different because the eights are perceiving problems that could occur, but sixes are like every scenario that other people probably wouldn't even imagine could happen. The sixes are still game planning for all of that so that they can prevent anything bad from happening. And so this creates a lot of anxiety, and there's all this worry wrapped up in all the things that could ever possibly happen. And they're thinking repressed because they spend so much time thinking about all of the possible things that could happen in the future, but then those things don't happen. And they've just spent all of that energy thinking. So the phobic sixes, using the focus of authority, the phobic six will surrender to the authority because that's where they think that the safety, they really value safety and security in the world, and that's where they think the safety is in the authority. And so they'll do all the things by the books, believing they'll turn out really great if they play by the rules. Now, on the other hand, the counterphobic sixes, they don't trust authority, so they watch to ensure things are just and that people are taken care of. And if authority doesn't do what they say they'll do, the counterphobic six is going to let them have it. So that's really, you know, a predominant difference within the sixes of having the phobic versus counterphobic response. And then you see the counterphobic six, how that is similar to the eight, but it's very different because the eight is from a place of passion while the counterphobic six is from that place of fear and anxiety. Eights, anger, sixes, worry, right? So sixes, as I mentioned, the thinking repressed because of all of that thinking, they're very, very thinking dominant about all of the things that could go wrong. Their fear is of being without support and without guidance. And their motivation is security and support. So it is our job to let the sixes in our lives know that they are supported. All right, moving on to the adventure, the last of the nine types, the Enneagram 7. They are our fun makers, life of the party. A room will lift when they walk into it because they are going to make things light and fun for everyone. And they are the reframe king and queens of the world. They will reframe all of their negative feelings because our Enneagram 7s only have like the top half of the feeling chart, if you will. They don't like to feel the negative feelings. They don't go there. So they reframe the negative feelings they have with thoughts. And this prevents them from feeling loss or grieving, a lot of those types of experiences, until they hit that one thing that they can't reframe. And then they have to deal with everything that they've ever reframed. So it can be very overwhelming for a seven to deal with feelings because they just want to be happy and optimistic and glass half full, and they love their freedom and doing what they want when they want to do it. But feeling repressed big time, and they have a really, really challenging time feeling their feelings, understanding the information that feelings have, because emotions have a lot of valuable information, and that is where their growth edge is in being able to drop into their heart center, to understand what they're feeling, to embrace any negative feeling and be able to process it versus just reframe it, think our way out of it. Think creates a feeling. So if I create a different feeling, then we're good. When the truth of the matter is, if you don't process the feeling, it can manifest into physical illness and it doesn't actually go away and you carry it with you. So that is their growth edge. Now, other people around them won't want the Enneagram 7s to change either, much like the 3s, because Enneagram 7s are so much fun. Who wants them to change having fun? Everybody wants fun in their life. So that's a particularly unique factor for the Enneagram 7s as well. The time orientation for 7s is the future, and they will have their future plans laid out with amazing detail. They will be so specific and know absolutely every little thing that's going to come in as part of that future plan that they have. And our Enneagram 7 friends, because of the top half range of their emotions, can create toxic positivity or unbalanced optimism, that things are always going to go well in a really good way, and that might not actually be reality. So the fear of the Enneagram 7 is deprivation or fear of missing out. They don't want to miss out on anything, and their motivation is happy and satisfaction. So let me get to my funny story as we're moving here to the top of the hour and one relationship tip, and we're going to wrap up really quick. So as I had indicated, the Enneagram has this magical transmutation of tension into humor. And so I had a couple family members working on a family task. One is an Enneagram 1. Let's be really, really efficient. The other is an Enneagram 7. Let's have an adventure. And this task was to go through some items that had been stored for a really, really long time, like we're talking maybe 20 years, that had no monetary value, if you will. And so what would be efficient for the Enneagram 1? Walk over to the trash can and drop it in. And what would be fun for the Enneagram 7? Oh, let's see what's in there and go on the adventure of looking at all of the things. And so you could feel the tension in the room as these two were talking about it was actually a memory they were sharing with me of going through this event and the things that had been stored. And I just said, oh, sure, naturally, right? Like, look at the Enneagram 1 living their programming. What's efficient and easy? I just told you what that would be. And, oh, look at the Enneagram 7 living their programming and going on that adventure. How cool. And the two people went from being in that tension state of, like, I don't feel seen, I don't feel understood, my way's the right way, like all of that, to laughing about it. It's like, oh yeah, yep, we're just human and we're just living our programming. So my relationship tip follows the coattails of this story, which is use the Enneagram language, especially in your intimate relationships. So when my significant other and I, before we knew the Enneagram, he's free-flowing and doesn't want to schedule, and I want a schedule. I want a routine, I want a schedule, and I don't want to know what I'm doing, when I'm doing it, and how I'm doing it, and I can fit so much into my work, into my week, I mean. And so, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you are such a control freak. And it's easy for the other person to respond and say, you are so irresponsible, right? So when we drop that language and embrace the Enneagram language of, I understand having what you want when you want it's really important to you, and I really like a schedule, what does it look like to compromise? It depersonalizes the situation, and you're just honoring each other for who you are. So it's amazing, and it's an incredible way to approach relationships. So I've talked a lot here today about each type, where they are repressed, where they are more expressive, and hopefully from listening to this, if you've got a sense of what your type is, you also will see your growth edge for embracing what you naturally repress. I'm going to close with a really quick story from a session I had this week that was so amazing and powerful, 100% Enneagram-focused Enneagram work. I'm working with a mom whose daughter is in that stage of transitioning from childhood to adulthood, looking at going off to college, and there were things that mom had perceived in her perception that the daughter, the child, the adult daughter could not do for herself. And we 100% worked the Enneagram energy and energetics, the programming. And as soon as we worked and shifted that energy, the neural pathways started firing different. And they're like, oh, I believe that she can do this. I believe the grown daughter can. That is the power of this individual work when we embrace the energetics that go into what makes us human and live the programming we have. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Next week, we're going to be back with a panel. We're going to discuss more of the Enneagram in our relationships, in our personal relationships. We have a surprise guest. She's amazing, bold, brave, beautiful, and powerful. You do not want to miss it. I cannot wait for you to meet her. So we'll see you back here next week, same time. And until then, friends, keep your eyes wide open.